Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight, which is step three. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Nicole and Jonathan. All right, so let's see. Step three says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. We'll start tonight on page 60. And it's ladies' choice, so if you want to go first or make him go first, it's fine with me.
Yeah, I'll go first.
Page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Nicole?
My name's Nicole. I'm an alcoholic.
Nicole.
My sobriety date is December 27th, 2018. My home group is Simple Actions. And I wanted to thank David for asking me to speak on the third step. So prior to coming to these rooms, I thought I was managing my life. I left my husband, and I was drinking nonstop. And I was like, this is what people do, right? That's just life. That's what people do. I had excuses for my drinking and my behavior for as long as I can remember. I had all the isms, you know. I'm going to work myself to death. I'm going to exercise myself to death. I'm going to fix everyone, you know, as long as I didn't have to look at me and my drinking. I thought, you know, maybe if I make more money, focus on others. But then it was as though my soul had left my body, you know, and I was alone, and I'm just going through the motions of life, but I couldn't stay stopped. I couldn't stop drinking. And it was, I had so much pain, and I knew I needed to do something different. So I surrendered, and I accepted within myself, so the first and second step, that I was an alcoholic, and no matter what I did, I was not going to stop. So I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and I was presented with a big book, and I remember reading it for the first time, and I was laying in my room, and I was like, this is really creepy. Like, how do people know that I do this stuff too? And then I shut it, like, no, this is weird, you know? Like, and then I opened it back up, and I'm like, no, read it, you know? So after I was reading it, I started to feel kind of hopeful. Like, wow, I'm not the only one that does this, that acts like this. So then after reading step one and two, and the help of my sponsor, of course, she really helped me be honest with myself. And it was my desperate need to stay sober that I was willing to do anything my sponsor said. You know, when I first came into the program, you know, get a sponsor, and I'm like, why? I'm a grown woman, and I have to listen to another grown woman tell me what to do. But that's, you know, Nicole, do you want to stay sober? And I said, yes, ma'am, okay, I'll do what you say, no matter how bizarre I thought it was. So that's all I have for that.
Thanks, Sharon. My name is Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Jonathan!
And I have a sponsor who I call less than I probably should, but he knows that I'm his sponsee. I also sponsor other people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a home group. It's the Candlelight Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Friday right down the street. And I am I'm an alcoholic. I am a relatively boring alcoholic. I wish my stories were like me, you know, charging into bars and beating people up. And all the debauchery and stuff that a lot of the drunkologues that I enjoyed when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wish my story consisted of that, but unfortunately it doesn't. It consists mainly, my greatest fight that I ever got into was with a houseplant in a club. I came up from a blackout and I had dirt all over me and plastic leaves. My friend to this day, I just saw him a couple weeks ago, he always reminds me about the day I got into a fight with a houseplant, got everybody kicked out of a bar. A lot of trying to control my drinking. I'm the opposite of the guy who can never have enough. I'm the guy who will absolutely destroy himself trying to control it. Buying 15 fancy beers per paycheck, so that's one beer per paycheck, and then ending up drinking 15 fancy beers in 2 days, and wondering why and beating myself up for it and keeping long journals and like really just obsessive compulsive ridiculous measures to try to control my alcoholism, because from a young age alcohol scared me. Everything was about control. My parents were all about control, and I wanted to exhibit that control, and I never could. And I did outrageous and uncontrollable things when I drank, and we won't go into my entire drunkologue. We're on step three today, but needless to say, I realized quickly that I was an alcoholic. Both my parents died from this disease, and I exhibited the exact same characteristics that they did, even though it still took me 2 years after my second parent died to come around to the idea. And to managing my own life, yes, I do that to the point of driving myself absolutely insane. I've tried every human power. I've tried pills. I've tried psychology. I've tried psychiatry, which, as my sponsors point out, are two completely different things. One of them, one prescribes and one diagnoses. I've tried joining the Navy, which is a great idea if you want to stop drinking. Nice, all right, there we go, good. I've tried living in my mom's basement and just playing video games and doing absolutely nothing but that. And if your plan is to live in your mom's basement until you're 30 and play video games, you probably shouldn't steal a car and then wreck it and then steal it again. You should probably like wash dishes or something. When none of these things did I do. I stole money from her, basically. Tried to break into her room with a screwdriver and then blamed it on my sister. That's the type of crap that I do. And she had cancer at the time too, so she's probably using that money to pay for chemotherapy treatments. But when it comes to alcohol, I do what I need to do to get it. And the higher power thing, I resented it deeply when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So the old C, the ABCs of alcoholism, was not my friend. I'm a Catholic school dropout. The proof is in the tie. It's not a clip-on. It's a real tie. It's still ingrained in my membrane how to tie these things, even though I hate wearing them. I only wear them for AA speaking engagements. Spent an inordinate amount of time as a child arguing against the existence of God with all of the priests and the people that I went to school with. And then I would be up at 2 a.m. contemplating the condition of my immortal soul, knowing that I was going to hell, and just having like sleep paralysis of the devil sitting outside of my window. And this went on for a decade and a half. If you find that normal or find that funny, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you think that's disturbing, I don't know. So my relationship with God got off to a very rocky start. I think I will. That's all I have to share for now. Thanks.
All right, we're going to pick up on page 60. Being convinced. We were at step 3, which is we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest in self-sacrifice. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Nicole?
I just want to thank Jonathan for sharing on being in the military. Because I always think it's interesting when people say that they're in the military and they're alive and they're alcoholics. Because I'm telling you right now, God had a plan for me. If I had joined the military, I probably would be locked up abroad somewhere, you know, like drunker than a skunk and, you know, trying to figure out a way out of the country. I'm sure of it. So thank God I didn't go that way because I probably wouldn't be alive today. So what self-will looks like for me, it's always fighting with myself is really what self-will like is for me. And having these expectations for myself. And if I'm not meeting these expectations, then I'm blaming everyone else for why I hadn't met those expectations. It's just like that negative energy walking around mad all the time, angry, resentful to anyone around me, and then drinking on top of it. And then it's funny because I have these expectations, but I don't want to tell anyone about them. You know, I'm just going to drink over it. I'm not going to talk about any of these expectations. I'm just going to drink about it. And you should read my mind, too. You know, you should know what I want, because this is what I want. But then coming into this program, luckily my sponsor pointed out to me, Nicole, you're not patient at all. And I'm like, what? I'm really patient. What are you talking about? You know, no, Nicole, let me just point out the reasons why you're not patient. And so thank God for this program because I would be walking around, you know, madder than a bee's nest right now if it wasn't for my sponsor to have to point these things out to me. So go ahead, John. You're long-winded. That's all I got for that. Sorry.
Thanks. I one of the things I always forgot, I never noticed this part until good old David F. pointed it out, is the personal adventures part. I love that now. That's one of my favorite parts of the big book. I want people to say I went on a personal adventure. I'm stealing that by the way when I moved to D.C.
I didn't relapse. I had a personal
adventure. Yeah, I had a personal adventure. That sounds fantastic. I love this part because it gives us the first requirement. I don't know of any other requirements that it gives us. It's the first requirement. The first and only requirement is that me running my life into the ground is a terrible idea, and it involves a lot of manipulation, and a lot of it is me being kind to your face, just appearing very self-sacrificing and very modest and just very, very humble. Let me tell you how humble I am and all of that. I, I when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I related very much to one guy who shared about masks, the different masks that we put on, and feeling like you spent your whole life living behind a mask. I also felt from a very early age that manipulation was a way to get things. And it was one of the only ways to get things for me. My parents were working often and weren't home very often, so I had a lot of nannies around the house and lived with nannies mainly. And so when my parents did come home, I manipulate them with that. Oh, well, you know, if you spend more time here, you know, stuff like that, and try to get things out of them. Very, very early age, four or five years old, I learned how to play this little trick, and it never really went away. I still do it today. Taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous does not make me magically delicious, as my old grand sponsor used to say. You know, and old habits die hard. If I'm not doing Alcoholics Anonymous, I will revert straight back into manipulation tactics. That is my go-to. Lying is my go-to. In fact, most of the time when somebody confronts me with some issue that could in any way foreseeably possibly tie back to something that I did wrong, the first thing that pops into my head is a lie. It always has been. If there was a Liarholics Anonymous, I don't know. I would have a conflict of interest. I'm not really sure which fellowship I would have joined, because the lying definitely started long before the drinking. I love it. In fact, it's comfortable to me. And any behavior that becomes comfortable, whether it's negative or positive, it becomes very, very difficult to break. It's like the pig wallowing around in its own filth, you know. It probably smells real bad. It's probably not super great to anyone else around. It's not even all that great to me, but it's comfortable. I know what that feels like. And I will choose that over change and uncertainty anytime. Which change and uncertainty for me is ownership, admitting to my faults, owning my problems, owning my character defects. I'd much rather act like this guy. And I even at 9 years of sobriety, I will still convince myself that the show will go off great if I just put my little spider web of manipulation plan into motion. And that I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, I should have said that to them. And then when I see them today, I'm going to say this, and then they're going to say that. And if they say that, I'm going to say this. And then I just, you can see why a guy like me drinks. This is my base state of waking up every morning. And if prayer doesn't follow immediately after that, I'm fucked for the rest of the day. I think that's all I got. Thanks.
Right on. You reminded me of this old timers that used to say that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place you go where people exaggerate about how dishonest they are.
That's me. I'm dead.
I always like that. Page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think he doesn't treat it. Wait a minute. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Nicole?
What page was I on?
It was on 61.
Oh, okay. 61.
Sort of toward the bottom, I think.
For me, yeah, delusion. Oh my gosh, delusion. I'm in Nicole's world, right? And, if people aren't doing what I want, then I'm going to get them to do what I want. You know, manipulation, like Jonathan said, I'm like a master manipulator. And if things aren't going my way, then I'm going to figure out how to maneuver things so they go my way, so it turns out, you know, to benefit me. And then if it's not benefiting me, then I'm drinking, and then I'm feeling guilty after the drink wears off, then those guilt feelings start creeping up again. So then I drink again, and it's like this vicious cycle. You know, when I was drinking, I couldn't get out of it as much as I tried. So again, with the sponsor, she had to point out to me, you know, how I was selfish. I always wanted to blame everyone else and why I drank, and you know, why I did the things I did. Prior to coming to this program, I was obsessed with drinking. I couldn't stop thinking about drinking. I couldn't imagine living my life without a drink. Like, you think about people who cut the grass, and I'm like, how am I gonna do that? You know, people go to work. How am I gonna have the courage to go to work? You know, I remember leaving work and just like white knuckling the steering wheel, like, I can't wait to get home and have a drink, you know? But thankfully through this program, it took the drink away, but I'm still, when you take a drink away, I'm left with myself. So I wake up every day and I think about myself. And I, you know, take a shower and I think about myself. And then I'm brushing my teeth, I'm thinking about myself. And I just can't get out of myself. And so I'm starting to feel crazy, like, why? I can't get out of myself, you know? So with this program and with my sponsor, you know, I call another alcoholic. I help someone else out. I think about, you know, maybe how what I did was wrong and try to amend that. And it's through this program that I was able to think this way, because I wasn't always able to think this way. That's all I have for that.
Thanks, Nicole.
Whew. This one always hits me hard. I wish, and this is personally me, some of y'all may relate, some of y'all may not, but I wish I related to the first part of this book when I first read it. What really hit me when I started reading this book, when my sponsor made me read this book, were these paragraphs right here. The drinking and, you know, Bill making gin in his bathtub, I'm like, what the fuck is that? I never even heard of that before, you know, stuff like that. Trying to jump out of a window, say he had to move his mattress to the fourth floor, people hiding in deserted barns, determined to die. Like, none of that crap really, really spoke to me, but this was the part that spoke to me. My four-step, unfortunately, was filled, pages and pages and pages, filled with stuff I did when I was stone cold sober in the act of trying to get drunk or trying to get something to put inside of me to make me feel better about myself. And that disgusted me. It absolutely disgusted me. And the problem is even looking at that, even taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will still enact those and do those things if I'm not practicing the third step. When people ask me what my favorite step is or what the most important step is, not a question I really enjoy, but I always answer the third step. I'm not a big first step guy, and that's just me. That's my experience. If you don't like it, call your sponsor. I'm just kidding. The third step where I think we're about to start reading, where it describes it as the keystone. That was the thing where the most healing began, was when I started faking, just absolute fakery, faking, coming into these rooms and faking like I had something going on. Trying to do the program to the best of my ability, even though God wasn't even in the picture until like the first year and a half, maybe 2 years of my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. Even though I'd walk in here and talk like I was the cock of the block, like I was, you know, God's gift to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the reason, because when you spend a lifetime manipulating others, it becomes incredibly easy to manipulate yourself. And that delusion was the hardest to drive out, and it still is to this day. I spent the entirety of my life trying to be cool, which is why the Navy was awesome for me, because you can just completely reinvent yourself and you can be whoever the hell you want to be. Lying is permissible as long as you can handle the consequences. You can make yourself into be the college football star guy who broke his ankle. You can say whatever the hell you want. Most people would believe you or just don't give enough of a shit to question you about it. And that's why the Navy was great. The first 22 years of my life, I had zero friends in school, and that is not an exaggeration. I just was not a kid that got along with people. And I was obsessed with being cool. I would watch stand-up comedy videos to try to go to school and make jokes with the other kids. And unfortunately, this is private school, and all the little rich kids that went to private school is the same fucking kids every year, and they all knew who I was, and they all knew what game I was running, and none of them wanted any part of it. So I spent an entire lifetime trying to present this persona of a cool kid, and the reality was I just didn't fit in. I didn't fit in any. I felt that I didn't fit in anywhere that I belonged. So lying was almost a requirement. Manipulation was a requirement. And in order to manipulate others better, I have to manipulate myself. That's also a requirement. Alcohol made it easier to do that for me. It took the strain, it took the burden off of me from the constant having to remember who I lied to and then lying to the other people that they might tell that I lied to so that those people don't think I'm a liar and all of that shit. It just drives me up the freaking wall. And as soon as I take a drink, all that goes away. And then you told me that God was my solution for all of that. And of course, I rebelled against that. I think that's all I got for now.
All right, we're going to continue on page 62. So, our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Period. Nicole?
Unlike Jonathan, who didn't have any friends, I had a lot of friends, I thought. As long as I was drinking, I was a young girl that wore many hats, I guess. You know, I hung out with the jocks, I hung out with the geeks, I hung out with the average people, whatever, I guess, what's average anyways. But as long as I had a drink in hand, you know, I could say what you wanted to hear, and if you weren't saying what I wanted to hear, then I would drink again, so then I'd be delusional thinking you were telling me what I wanted to hear, right? And I think, for me, God has, like Jonathan, I'm Roman Catholic, you know, but I felt like at some point, like I had a faith, but I didn't understand it. You know, growing up in the Roman Catholic Church, going to church, it was just like Charlie Brown in the background. I'm like, I don't understand this, but my grandma would be like, you got to do this, so, you know, you'll be a good person if you do this, you know? But coming into these rooms is where I found God, because I realized that for me, God is speaking through you guys. So eventually, going through the rooms, it was almost like I was this young girl coming into the rooms in like the Roman Catholic Church, and it was like wah, wah, wah in the background. And then all of a sudden, it's like I started hearing what people were talking about, and I actually could understand what they were saying. So my faith, I think at one point I felt like it was like my life, I was alone, I was miserable, like I felt like my soul had left me. I thought maybe this is a bad karma, like, you know, God is this angry guy in the sky that, you know, this is what you deserve, Nicole. But then coming into the rooms, that feeling started going away and I started to like people, because before I hated everyone. But I would actually listen to what people were saying, and I'm like, wow, that makes sense. You know, I'm feeling it now. And over time, I remember laying in my bed at like 4 months sober, and probably for like normal people, they're laying in their bed 4 months sober and they're like, yeah, my children are alive. Look how beautiful they are. But for me, it was like, wow, my children are alive and I'm not drinking, you know, and then my kids are alive. Like, this is amazing. So I think that's where I started to really start seeing God, was within the rooms, you know, over time. That's all I got for that.
Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah, selfishness killing me. That was also one of probably the most important paragraphs I read when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, because, like, as I mentioned before, the drinking, the debauchery, while it's the best thing ever to go into an AA meeting and listen to people tell their harrowing stories of alcoholism. I'm going to steal that one, too. I can't relate. I just don't relate. I'm more of a... I'm obsessed with control. Obsessed with it. You won't see that on the outside. All of that goes on in here. And it sometimes ekes out a little bit here and there, and I try very hard to reel that back in. The drinking, I'm a completely different person when I drink. I'm a little more happy-go-lucky. Will probably, and my drunk log is probably half of y'all in here have heard, is basically consists of me not being able to keep my hands to myself, my mouth shut, or my pants on in the pivotal moment in time, and one DUI. That's literally my drinking. It's the sobriety issue that was the thing that was driving me up the wall, and I didn't think anybody understood until somebody was talking about, took me to the side in an AA meeting and talked to me about untreated alcoholism. That was what really hit it. The selfishness will kill me. It absolutely will kill me. I will drive myself mad trying to control my selfish and self-centered nature and trying to control the perceptions of others about me and my selfish and self-centered nature. I will drive myself absolutely bonkers without something going on, without a drink, because drinking works. It probably will still work if I go out there. I'll probably fuck up a lot more shit, but it's still a solution. It will still provide me ease and comfort if I want it to. And I know I'm an alcoholic, and if I start drinking again, it will go down like a ski jump, and I will be probably out of the Navy in about 6 months. You'll probably hear about some incident at the Pentagon 6 months from now with a drunk Navy guy. You know, that would be me. I know that. But I also know that drinking still works. It still provides. It never stopped working for me. It will still provide ease and comfort. And I can still play that tape back and think about the one or two times where everything worked out and I got the right amount of drunk and the right girl at the right time, the right place, and everything was just, you know, was great. That will kill me. That obsession will kill me. The selfish and self-centered things that I do to others and try to cover up and hide, obsessing about that stuff will kill me. And I know from personal experience. My mother, I came home from leave. And I went out with my girlfriend, who is now the mother of my children, ex-wife mother of my children, went to watch a movie, came back home the next day, and found her dead in her bed. The police ruled it as an accidental overdose, but the will was gone, there was no suicide note, there was no nothing. And so there were 2 years followed of this broiling controversy where my aunt and a bunch of other people who aren't sick, crazy, psychotic alcoholic, who thought that my stepfather killed my mother. They were his pills. He was mysteriously out of town. We can go on and on about all the circumstantial evidence. The point of this story is there was like 10 or 15 people who also thought that he killed my mother, which is different because it's not just me in my head coming up with my own shit. So now I've got justified anger. Now I'm drinking at this man for a year and a half. And this is where the real sick, depraved, selfish, and self-centered actions start coming into play. And I start using people around me. And I start ruining people's lives. And people start kicking me out of their lives. I get a DUI and decide that I'm just not going to have a car because then I can't get a DUI if I don't have a car, you know, because get rid of the alcohol or get rid of the car. What's that? I'm just going to bum and use other people in my life to get around places, you know. This is before the onset of Uber. So I'm mooching off of everybody, living in my buddy's barracks room because I was deemed by the Navy to be a danger to myself and others. So I'm sleeping on my buddy's barracks room couch so I don't have to sleep on the ship. Researching hitmen and black clothing and guns to kill my stepfather. That's where alcoholism landed me. But I wasn't getting a DUI. I had a good credit score. I had a girlfriend. Everything on the outside is wonderful, but on the inside, I'm psychotic and I'm dying. And it's all because I selfishness, self-centeredness, just machinations of revenge and all of the stuff that goes along with it. And I don't ever want to go back to that experience, but I'm grateful for that experience because it was a very, very visceral experience of selfishness and self-centeredness that will kill me. It absolutely will. Or land me in prison for the rest of my life. That's all I got. Thanks.
Page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Nicole?
Prior to this program, I didn't realize how big of a control freak I am. You know, like, if things are not going my way, boy. But at 15, I remember there was a guy I was dating at the time, and he had cancer, and he was 18. And at 15, I think I didn't really understand death. You know, as an adolescent, it's like death, everyone's invisible, and you don't think anyone's going to die in your life. Well, he ended up dying of cancer. And that's when I think my drinking really had transpired, like from 15, you know, all the way on. Because in my mind, like, I was going to marry him, you know, what, and then I'm mad at God because what, how did you take him away from me? That's not right. So it was like a cycle. I think I found myself, you know, drinking and then hanging out with other people that were drinking just as bad as me, if not worse. And I was always the one, too, that would hang out with people that drank just a little bit more, like, over the top than me. Because I could be undercover. No one's going to pay attention to what Nicole's doing. Because look at him. He's the one that got the DUI. You know, he's the one that's going to jail, not Nicole. You know, but it's just, I'm like a cat with nine lives, I think, you know, for real, because I've been always like this close to going to jail or getting a DUI, but being the master manipulator, I can talk myself out of everything, you know. Probably, I think there's been like five cars that I've owned that I totaled every one of them. And then my sister's, you know, after I totaled mine, I had to take my sister's car and total it. But again, I didn't go to jail. I don't know how. I think there, and God has always been in my life, you know, but just not realizing it. But I think what, after you take the drink away though, for me, I'm just irritated. Like, I don't want to get up and go to work. I don't want to drive down to the grocery store. I don't want to wait for that woman to cash me out. She's taking forever. Come on, don't you understand? I have places to go. I have things I have to do. But through this program and my sponsor, she's able to, you know, point out, you know, Nicole, you're alive. You know, yeah, you may have totaled nine cars and destroyed all these people's lives, you know, in the process, but you're alive and you're well and you can change things now. And it, so through the like serenity prayer, which I have to do on a daily basis, to keep me in check, because my brain will not stop, you know. So it's like I don't have a drinking problem, but what, like David says, I have a thinking problem. That's all I have for that.
You're not giving me enough time to think about my awesome shares that I'm going to drop on everybody. I'm just kidding. Y'all don't want me thinking about my shares. It's better if I just come up here and shoot from the hip. Takes the me out of the sharing. So I really love the next paragraph. The next paragraph is one of my favorite parts. Stuart talks about this position. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I'm a big third step promises guy. Like I said, third step's my, when asked, I'll tell people the third step's my favorite step. I'll even justify it to you because I'm all about, you know, justifications and stuff. They refer to it as the keystone in this paragraph we just read. And they did, as most of, I see a lot of faces I know in here. Some of, I won't describe the whole archway thing that the big book describes all the step as. But the keystone, for those who don't know, is the little stone that's in the middle of the archway that all of the support leans against. And that was 100% true for me. When I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, I came in here with a lot of preconceived notions. The first time I went to a meeting, I could have swore everybody was saying Jesus like repeatedly. I don't think anybody, now the experience that I've had in AA, I'm pretty sure no one said, but whenever you say God, I think Jesus, I think Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, blessed art thou amongst women, blessed the fruit of thy womb, Jesus, yada, yada, yada. I think rulers on the hand. I got smacked with rulers so much on my hand, they stopped doing it because I used to laugh at them. At 6 years old, I'd start laughing at the nuts because I had calluses on my hands. I was not a good kid, but so I dragged all of this into AA. I dragged all of the dogma, the stigma, the don't hang out with gay people because Jesus turns them into pillars of salt. Like I even dragged that bullshit in here, you know, like everything. I didn't like any of it, but it was like paradoxically, it was still ingrained in me. It was a part of my nature, and I couldn't get rid of it. And every time you said God, that's what I thought about. And I know I'm not unique in here. I'm like, you know, most of the people I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous have the same problem. And that's pretty much what my sponsor said in not so many words. He basically would say, why don't you just shut the fuck up and show up to AA and do AA. And that's what I needed. You know, not everybody needs that kind of sponsorship. I need that sponsorship. It cuts through the white noise in my head. And that's fantastic for me. That's absolutely fantastic for me. That's exactly what I needed. And that's what I did. I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous. I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't believe in God before I took the steps. Didn't really believe in Him after I took the steps. All I knew is that I was fucked. And if I kept doing what I was doing, I was probably going to. I don't think I would have killed myself at that point. I would have killed somebody else, and I would have ended up in prison for the rest of my life. In fact, I was thinking about all the ways that I was going to survive in prison. often before I came to AA. So I showed up at Alcoholics Anonymous and I took the 12 steps. And this is also hilarious for a guy who goes to Catholic school. I read a lot of theology stuff, and I'm not going to quote any of it from the podium because I did it at like 3 years of sobriety, and this guy with 30 years of sobriety came up and said, "What the fuck are you doing? We don't talk about that stuff here. Nobody cares about your conception of God. It's your conception." You know, we had to have that whole talk. But I read a lot of it. I'm the complicated guy. I'm the guy that reads all the indulges in lengthy arguments and reads the windy, whiny books. I'm that dude, and I can shit in your ear for hours about it, but I won't. But that works for me. I enjoy doing that. That's my seeking. That's what I do to seek my higher power. I enjoy reading about all that crap. What I can tell you in the simple one sentence version is I experience God through others. When I show up, I feel like the soul, the collective human soul, like comes together, and something like that's that feeling I get when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I actually do the work, because I don't experience it anywhere else. You can't bottle that crap. You can't explain why so many people who didn't want to fucking be here in the first place show up to the same meetings just about every day, listen to the same people share about the same shit, and we still show up. If that was a Netflix show, you wouldn't watch 5 minutes of that shit. You would turn it off. You would turn it off, right? But we still show up every freaking week and do the same damn thing and talk about untreated alcoholism and all that, and the fear and the loathing and the self-centeredness. We did the same shit, but we show up. The people that stay sober show up, and it goes from drudgery to boring to the thing that helped me save my own life and the thing that I'm eternally grateful for. And that's basically the room. We could say the rooms. I like more complicated explanations because it feeds my ego, but we can say the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is my higher power, and that works. It translates the message, and it's been doing that successfully. And not only has it done that, it makes me a father. Because I didn't know what that was before coming in here. I didn't even know what that was when I had my first kid. I'll share a quick story with you, and then I'll shut up, I promise. My first real God moment was fatherhood. Right before I had my kid, I called Bobby and I said, my wife doesn't want to have kids. I don't know about this marriage anymore. But he's like, you've only been married for a year. Why don't you just, slow down? What does your wife want? Have you asked her what she wants? And we, at some point, probably because I was manipulating, we agreed that we would stop trying to not have kids. And they said that it was going to take 6 months for the birth control to wear off. And I was like, perfect, it gives me all this time to plan and yada, yada, yada. And she was pregnant the next week. And I called Bobby and he laughed at me for like 10 minutes straight. Like, I would try to talk and he'd just start laughing again. And he thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And so I have this baby girl who absolutely adores me. And the lack of sleep was becoming a problem. It was like a year and a half. She just started walking, so she'll run in the room and start gabbing at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I got so mad one time that I burst out of the room to go tell her to get back in her bed, and I ran into her and she fell over. And I had no idea that she was right there, and I knocked her over, and she looked at me with the absolute worst look. And that was the first time that I simultaneously thought about taking a drink and also getting on my knees and immediately praying. And calling somebody and then going to a meeting. And that's when the lizard brain thing switched. And instead of the immediate reaction being, it's time to take a drink, the immediate reaction is, my brain is revolting against everything Alcoholics Anonymous, but my feet are walking to the car, my hands are on the steering wheel, and I'm driving to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm probably listening to death metal or gangster rap and flicking people off and doing 30 miles per hour to the speed limit. And then I show up to the meeting, and I talk to a drunk, even though I absolutely don't want to. I don't like people. That's also my base level of operating. I dislike people. But I will. So my brain is revolting, but my feet are walking towards the newcomer, and I'm talking to the newcomer. And then magically, through no fault of my own, because none of this has anything to fucking do with me, I'm driving the speed limit on the way home. And I'm making amends to my ex my then wife for shit that I've done. And you can't bottle that crap. Like, I don't, this is the only place I've ever received those gifts. That's all I got.
Oh, All right, page 63, our final paragraph for the evening. We are now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
Prior to this program, I had all the isms. You know, I dated the good guy, the bad guy. Then I tried getting married to the good guy, and I tried having kids, you know, but it wasn't long. I remember after having my first son, or no, my daughter, I was able to stay sober the whole time I was pregnant, but then I started nursing her. And over time, I remember doing what, I don't know, described as pump and dump, like timing when I can nurse enough time so I can drink. And still, even then, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. That's just like what normal people do, right? Eventually, I'm alone without my kids. I ruined my entire family, you know, and I'm drinking. And I remember getting mad because, you know, things weren't going my way. And I'm drinking over all this stuff, and I didn't show up to work. And my boss and her boss and the police show up at my door one morning. And I remember waking up, and I hope I'll never forget this, and I go to the door, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I? I would have told them that I just got the news that I'm dying of cancer, I think, for real, just to get them, like, away, you know? Because I'm like, shoot, the gig is up, you know, crap. But ironically, like, about maybe 6 months prior to that, so I leave my husband, and my sister comes down from New York, and oh, great, now I can drink more, right? Now I can really get it going. And we're gonna go to a concert, and my friend Joe, that I hadn't seen in 10 years, comes, and he's gonna go to the concert with us. And I was like, hey Joe, do you wanna drink? And he's like, no, I haven't drank in like 5 years. I'm like, what? You know, you're like, you're a loser, really? We're going to a concert, and you're not gonna drink, really? But he was like so serene, you know, but in my brain, I'm thinking like, you're whatever. You know, and of course I get completely annihilated that night, and I'm like, you know, puking all over the place, all that fun stuff. But, you know, and then I'm thinking like, Joe, but he's driving us all over. So it's perfect. It works out. But anyway, so my, once then, you know, so that was like 6 months, and then my boss shows up and, you know, worried sick because they had called me all morning like, Nicole, where are you? This isn't like you. And I can't, you know, they can't know who the real Nicole is, the alcoholic Nicole who drinks alone by herself, you know, all night long and drinks herself asleep. But right then, for me, after they finally left, after I talked them into leaving, I fell to my knees and I was like, God, please help me. Like, because I knew, like, something was not right, but I couldn't figure it out. And just then, my friend Joe, it like clicked, like, oh, Joe. He had said he hasn't drank in like 5 years, you know, maybe I should call him. And then I'm like, no, he's boring. Like, I couldn't imagine not drinking, really. But I call him and I'm like, Joe, remember that program, you know, that program you're talking about? But I didn't want to go into any details because, you know, I'm not really an alcoholic. Can you give me more information? He's like, oh, Nicole, just go. The people are great. They're going to love you, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't think so. You know, because in my mind, an alcoholic is you had to have the DUI. You have to have no job. You have to, you know, all these, this criteria, this like checkbox or whatever that requires you to be an alcoholic. But I ended up going, thank God. And it's like everyone was waiting for me. Like, oh, you're just in time. Finally came, you know, and that's really what this program has been. It's like a spiritual experience, you know. I didn't, so I guess once I conceded in the fact that, yeah, I am an alcoholic, and I was listening to what the people were saying in these rooms and how it was very similar to what I've been through and in the book, you know, I kept going to the rooms. And, you know, I just keep it really simple. At night, before I go to bed, I, you know, thank God for keeping me sober. And then in the morning, every morning, I wake up and read, like, the 24 hours a day book and do the third step prayer and then the seventh step prayer. But that's all I got.
That's it? Oh, yeah. Thanks, Nicole.
I memorized this prayer against every, as we talked about with the whole Catholic dogma, against every bias that I had, I memorized this prayer. And that was the first step in the change. Being in the military, I'm blessed with the ability to do things even when I think they're incredibly stupid, but doing them anyways. And anyone who's in the military probably or has been at some point can attest to that. And now in a leadership position, it's even better because now I have to tell people to do dumb shit that I think is dumb and then pretend like it's awesome. I came into the AA with that wonderful, that was the one thing that I had going for me, was the ability to do things that I thought were incredibly stupid. And, turned out, ended up changing the way that I approach life. I don't enjoy helping people. I don't enjoy people, period. I don't enjoy God. That's once again my base level of operating. People have brought me nothing but pain, suffering, and humiliation and bullying. And God has brought me nothing but guilt and homework. That's pretty much what I got out of them for about 20, 22, 23 years. When I'm able to empty myself of all of that shit that I wake up with every single morning, it hasn't gone. I don't know if it goes away in like 3 years. I don't know when it goes away, but it hasn't gone away for me yet. When I empty that crap out in the morning when I wake up, my day goes so much better, and I'm able to do all the things that we talked about before: being a father, being employable, telling guys in the military to do dumb things, and pretending like, you know, I think it's a great idea. Stuff of that nature. I'm able to do that much more effectively and without. Without all of the crazy stuff that goes on in my head, so I always think it's important, and I like to express this. I never liked it when people said you can't come into Alcoholics Anonymous for anyone but yourself. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to save my marriage, and I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous for myself. But that was a process. That was a long process. I think telling people that they have to come into AA for themselves, it may be exclusive. I don't know. You know, nobody asked me how to run Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's just my opinion. That's how I feel. Come into AA however the fuck you need to come into AA. You know, do the prayers, memorize the prayers, and show up and help drunks for whatever fucking reason you feel like you need to. Sorry. I'm in the Navy. I use the F word as like a noun, verb, dangling participle. So I'm trying to curb my cursing a little bit. I know to record stuff here.
You're not sorry.
No, I'm not. I'm lying. just come in and do the work for whatever reason it needs for you to take to get into AA. Or don't do it, because that, and I can attest to that, it is a wonderful way to build desperation. And then I crawled my sorry behind back into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I you could have told me to stand on my head in the corner and read the big book while everybody else was having. You could have told me to do it in Starbucks. That was the worst part about AA when I first came in here, was all a married man in Starbucks, and I'm concerned about all the hot women in yoga pants that are watching me read this big book with another grown-ass man in the middle of Starbucks. That's my biggest concern at that point. But I did it. I was willing to do it, and I showed up repeatedly. And I always sit across the table and laugh at spotsies that come in now, and they don't want to. You can tell they're uncomfortable. They got a hat on. They got their jacket pulled up, and they're reading They're reading a book with another grown ass man in the middle of Starbucks. Like, yeah, I know what that's like. I know what that's like. But I also know what that desperation is like. And I know if they continue to show up and do that, they have a good chance of staying sober. And I'll say this, and I'll shut up. The people that I see in this room, that I've seen come into this room consistently, they show up in groups, they show up in herds, they show up with sponsees, they show up with big books. They're usually connected to the same people, and they do the work, and their lives get better, and you get to watch people change and grow, and you get to watch this program change other people into other things. And being able to be a part of that is probably one of the greatest blessings that I've ever had the pleasure of experiencing. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan. All right, we are going to pass the baskets. Could I turn that over to somebody? I see them right over there on the step. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Calling the proper authorities does not go against any AA traditions and is recommended when someone may have broken the law or endangered the safety of another person. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Hi, my name is JT. I'm an
alcoholic. JT!
So my home is Candlelight meeting.
Nice and loud, JT.
My home group Candlelight on Friday, January 31st, we're having a dinner and a speaker because apparently drunks like fits. It's like Fifth Friday. Eating starts at 6:30. The speaker is going to be Patrick L. from Chesapeake if he is free. He's getting a new work situation, so hopefully we'll have him come out and speak. So if you have any more, if you need any more information, see me after the meeting.
Thanks.
The food starts at 7?
6:30.
6:30? Okay. Patrick Lanier, huh?
Tentatively.
Any other announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, you're the reason we're here. Is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name. There's literature available. It's usually right over, yeah, and it still is, right over there. Please see any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a book. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. A few reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank our speakers one more time? After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at this boutique Mexican craft organic place. It's like totally hipster, called Plaza del Sol on 20, where is it, BJ? 22nd and Grand and Colonial.
You hit the railroad tracks, you've gone too far.
Yeah, yeah. 22nd and Colonial, Plaza del Sol. Food. It's good. Did I mention we were going to go out to eat?
Yeah.
Okay. And could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Aaliyah!
My name's Aaliyah and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Aaliyah.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Happy New Year, everybody. Let's pray.
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.